Think. Shmuel Aleph Yud Zayin, Perek Pasuk Mem Hey, which is where David is about to kill Goliath. The seminal event in Jewish history, as the Pasuk itself proves. Take a look at Pasuk Mem Hey, it's on the flip side of the first page. Vayomer David Plishti, David said to the Philistine, Atah Baylai Becher V'chanis, you are coming towards me with a sword, and with a spear, with a kidon, and a battle axe. Vanochi Baylech, and I am coming against you. B'shem Hashem Tzvakos, in the name of God, the Lord of hosts. Elokei Marachos, Marachos Yisrael, the God of the legions of Israel. Asher Chirafta, whom you have blasphemed. Now we have a general principle, which we cited at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, which is that the name Tzvakos, where it appears, indicates a major change in the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, in the Hashgacha of Hashem on the world. By that I mean that the name Tzvakos for Hashem was introduced for the first time by Shmuel, by Chana, in a prayer for the birth of Shmuel. And the way the Mefarshim explained it doesn't appear anywhere else in Tanakh, never appears anywhere in Torah, never anywhere earlier in Navi. The first time the name Tzvakos appears is at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. And in fact, Chana introduced this name, which then became one of the ineffable names of God. We don't say the word usually Tzvaos, we say it as Tzvakos whenever we can. So since that is the case, clearly this has a major significance, and Chana's introducing at the time had a major significance. And the way Tzadok explained it back then is that Tzvakos represents God's dealing with the hosts of Am Yisrael, with the masses of Am Yisrael, in a unique fashion. And it changes, there are times when changes are necessary when the generation requires a new form of leadership. And at that time, the name Tzvakos invokes, okay, since you have to relate to different people differently, and there are myriads of people and various different generations in Am Yisrael, therefore a sea change is necessary in the way you relate towards us. And with Chana, with her tefillah, brought about, of course, the birth of Shmuel. And Shmuel changed the nature of Klal Yisrael in that at the period in time, the period of the Shoftim, Nevuah, prophecy, was very rare. There were very few prophets. And if they did prophesize, they prophesized they gave their message, they delivered their message, and they went back home again. At the time, from Shmuel on, prophecy became much more widespread. Shmuel set up entire schools for prophecy. Prophecy became much more, available to the people. That was Shmuel's major sea change. And Shmuel, therefore, at the time of the birth of Shmuel, the name Tzvakos was invoked to indicate that things were changing. The period of the Shoftim was changing to the period of Shmuel.
What is the exact translation of
this? Armies, hosts, crowds.
But isn't it possible they invoke this particular phrase in time of war?
It's possible, but it seems then redundant. What's it between Hashem Tzvakos and Elokei Marchos Yisrael? In other words, why both names? That's from Talon.
So this came after that?
Afterwards, yes. Yeah, everything is after. It's all later. So I believe here also, David is invoking this name, perhaps unwittingly, I'm willing to say it's subconscious. David is invoking this name in order to tell us that now something unique is going to happen as well.
We have had the same phrase in another word before that.
Where?
Hashem Yishmol Chomo.
That's not the same thing, right? You're saying it's the same thing. Because you want to say...
the same thing.
Right, you want to say Tzvos has to do with armies, but that's not the Pashup Shot. Because the Pashup Shot at the beginning of Shmuel... Can I have another second? At the beginning of Shmuel, when the name Tzvakos appears the first time, it has nothing to do with armies, it has nothing to do with war. What happened there is that... No, I beg to differ with you. Here it says...
In what form did she use it?
Well, I'm finding it. Vatin in Shmuel Aleph Yud Aleph. Vati Dor Neda Vatomar Adonai Tzevaos Imro Tire Boni Amosecho Zchartoni Los Ishkachas Amosecho Menasato Lamoscha Zera Anoshim Nasativ La Adonai Koy Mechayov Moro Lo Yale Al Rosho. Here it says, and she vowed, fortunately we have the English here, and she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will look upon the affliction of your bondswoman, that means your slave, and you will remember me, and you will not forget your bondswoman, and you will give your bondswoman a man child, and I shall give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head. No. What does this Tzvelkos have to do with armies? Nothing. Okay, a host, army, so what's it? A host means crowds. Lots and lots of people. And I believe that this is very, very, the same meaning it is here. Although you're right, it appears here in the context of war. I don't think that the connotation here is one of war. Or that Hashem, the warrior god, so to speak, should come, like Hashem Yish Milchama. I think the pshat is like this. David HaMelech now is about to make a major kiddush Hashem. And I want to point this out. Shaul was a very righteous king. A big tzaddik. Major, major person. Positive. But he never made a major Kiddush Hashem. If you think about his history as related in Tanakh, Shaul never made a Kiddush Hashem. He led the nation. He might have even inculcated them with great midos, great dedication to Torah. But not like this. Not like David and Goliath. And not like David throughout his life. I want to show you a beautiful message. Take a look at my notes on the last page. Yalkut Shimoni Shmuel Beis Sima Kuf Mem Hey. They have a quote in the first paragraph. It says, Lo Tivne Bais Lishmi. We all know David HaMelech was told he's not allowed to build a Beis HaMikdash. Wasn't allowed to. Ki Domim Rabim Shafakta, because he spilled a lot of blood. Came with Shoshama David Kach. What's David or this Nisyara? He was afraid. Amar Harein Yifsalti Me Liv Nos Beis HaMikdash. I've been rendered unfit to build the Beis HaMikdash. And Taka, the way most people learn this, it means that since he was such a big warrior, he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Amar HaKosh Baruch. HaKosh Baruch said, don't worry. On the contrary, Chayecha, you should know by your life, Hein Lefanai Kikarbanos. All the blood you spilled in battle by me is regarded like a sacrifice. Dichsiv, it says, Kidomim Rabim, much blood, Shafachto Lefanai, you spilled before me. Vein Lefanai Elekarban, before me implies a sacrifice. Shneem Rav Shachatis Ben Habakkuk Lefnei Hashem, he sacrificed the calf before God. And the Medrash goes on to say, so if that's the case, why wasn't David allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash? Extraordinary thing. The Medrash says, because were he to have built the Beis HaMikdash, God would never have been able to destroy it. Since David is such a quote-unquote holy warrior, by the way, we have a tape on this topic. I forget which number. EH-105, I think. But since David was such a holy warrior, the Beis HaMikdash could not have been destroyed were it to be built by David. So it's a whole new perspective. The Medrash has the other perspective, the conventional understanding, which is that since David was a warrior and the Beis HaMikdash is a place of peace, so therefore he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash. But this perspective is that no. Since everything David did in war was with the intent of sacrificing, of being Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, of sanctifying God's name, that's why he waged war. Therefore, he was too holy to build a Beis HaMikdash. A Beis HaMikdash built by David HaMelech could never be destroyed. And obviously, when we get to that passage, we're going to have to explain in greater detail. But this shows us a remarkable different approach to war. Whether you like it or don't like it, whether you're a warmonger or a pacifist, what you see by David HaMelech is that David HaMelech's approach towards war, how can we make Kadesh Shem Shamayim? How can we make this war, these dead goyim, as if they're korbanos? Nobody had approached the war before that, hitherto, of that sort. Now, this fits in with your pshat too. Elokei Marchos Yisrael. Hashem Ish Milchama. Hashem is invoking this name of Hashem Tzvakos, not just because he's changing the type of attitude which Klaus is going to have towards war. Because from now on, wars, Milchemes Beis David, are going to be wars of Kiddush Shem Shemayim, not just defensive wars, not even conquering wars, but wars of Shem Shemayim. However, that can be understood. But besides that, he's saying that I want to Hashem to come out with help me in this venture. And locate Marchos Yisrael. And whenever we go out and we wage war, Hashem should be on our side. I don't know. Again, I don't claim that this is David HaMelech's overt thought at this time. But I believe that David HaMelech had a quasi-prophetic inkling of what his destiny would be, and therefore he's invoking at this time, which is the first act of war which this warrior is going to engage in, the theme which is going to underlie his entire life. Okay? So the bottom line is, David is now beginning on the path of being the holy warrior, which he was, the person who waged wars l'shem shamayim as Karbanos, and therefore reached a very high madrega thereby. Okay? So that's Pasuk Mem Hey, and that's how David HaMelech comes. He says, this is my strength, everything I do is with Kiddush Shem Shamayim. It was a famous Gemara, and I forget what it is. I think it's the Sanhedrin Chelek. It says that David HaMelech could wage war and still see HaKadosh Baruch Hu helping him. And then it goes through all the generations down, further and further away from David, until Chizkiyahu HaMelech, it says, by Sancheir, he had to stay in bed and see God make a very great miracle in order to perceive that God was actually manipulating the war. By David HaMelech, he could see in the battlefield Hashem. As he was killing people with the sword, he could see really Hashem's with him. That's a very high madrega. By Chizkiyahu, the nace was much greater, that God came in the middle of the night and struck Sancheirv's camp dead. But that was a shortcoming. Because were they to be on a high madrega, they would have perceived HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in much more diminished, even in much more, quote-unquote, natural forms of warfare. Okay, so that was David HaMelech, who everywhere he went, any war he waged, he perceived and brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu with him. Okay, he continues his speech in Pasuk Mem Vav. Hayom hazeh, this day, Yisagircho Hashem b'yodi, God will deliver you b'yodi in my hands. V'kisicho, and I will smite you. V'atziros yoshtoshcho melech, going to remove your head from upon you. V'nasati peger machaneh plishtim hayom, and I'm going to leave the carcass of the camp of the Philistines today, because I assume because Goliath represents the entire camp, l'ot hashamayim, to the birds of the heaven, you know, obviously for the buzzards to eat, L'chatz arts, and for the animals to scavenge. The Yiduka arts, and everybody will know, Ki Yesh Elokim Yisrael Yisrael, that there is a God for the Jewish people. Yeah. The Yiduka kol hazeh, and all my congregation will know, Ki, this congregation, Ki lo b'cher b'chanis Yoshi Hashem, that not with a sword, nor with a spear will God provide salvation. Ki Hashem ha-milchama, rather Hashem has the war in his hands, and therefore the nasana eschem b'yadeinu will give us into your, give you into our hands, even without a sword, without a spear, as we know David HaMelech is using a simple slingshot. That's a very interesting usage here, very rare usage as far as I know. Yehoshia. There's an extra hey in Yehoshia. You see that at the bottom of in Pasuk Mem Zayin? So I think that the hey is significant. The hey represents Shem Hashem. And also it says, Chazal tells us that Olam Hazeh is created with a hey. Olam Ba is created with the yod, it's perfect. And Olam Hazeh is created with a hey, so to speak, half size. So I think that the fact that it's the letter Hey is significant, but I'm going to leave that for later this evening when we come to another letter Hey to explain it in greater detail. Pasuk Memches. What? Is there something? No, it should be just Yoshia, not Yehoshia. Probably grammatically. Call Yoshia, Chamiasas, Ragam, yeah. Vayaki Yoshua, right. Vayaki Kama Plishti. When the Plishti arose, Vayelech Vayikrav, and he went and he drew close, he crossed David towards David. Originally, Goliath had said to David, come here. But he was so incensed by David's speech that he started going towards David. Vaymaher David. So David went quickly. Vayoratzamarach, and he ran towards towards the battlefield, I guess towards the boundary. Ligrasa Plishti, towards the Plishti. He wanted to get within aim. Vaishlach David as Yodola Kelly. David sent his hand into his vessel. By Kachmisham Evan, he had 5 stones there. He took one of the stones. Vaikala, and he shot it. Vayachza plishta mitzcho, he hit the Philistine in his forehead. Vatitba Evan mitzcho, and the stone sunk into Goliath's forehead. Vayipolaponav arza, and he fell on his face to the ground. Now, all the Mephoshim are bothered here by 2 issues. First of all, Goliath, we were told, is wearing a helmet. How did the stone sink into his forehead? His forehead should have been covered. What? It's possible, it's possible. I'm not saying that's just a question they ask. Their answers, obviously. The other question by which is more difficult, is how could Goliath have fallen forwards? If the impact of the stone hit him on the forehead, he should have fallen backwards, not forwards. Right? So there are a couple of interesting answers here. The Radak says, first of all, he gives your answer. He says that, but he says, look, his first answer is he says, listen, the whole thing is an ace anyway. So if it's an ace, so it got through the helmet somehow, right? It pierced the helmet, whatever, pushed the helmet back. And he says maybe there was something natural. In other words, when Goliath, for instance, later before it, Goliath said, I'm going to give your carcass over, your David carcasses, to the birds of the heaven. That's why David responded in kind. So maybe when he brings down, maybe when Goliath said the birds of the heaven, he looked up or pointed up, and at that point his helmet slid back on his head. So therefore it was vulnerable. And he says a couple of other things here in that respect. Then he speaks about the issue of Goliath falling forward, and he brings down 2 midrashim. One marriage is that in order that there was an ace, in order that Goliath's mouth should lick dirt, right, because he had blasphemed God with that mouth. And besides that, he brings that up shot because the name of Dagon, his Avodah Zorah, was engraved on his heart. And that way the name of the Avodah Zorah would be wiped in the ground as well. There's an interesting Rashi here, which I cannot make heads or tails out of. I honestly don't have any pshat in it. Rashi brings down also to a medrash, the Memtes, Vayipolaponov, that's the inside, he fell on his face, loyally polacharov, he should have fallen backwards. Sharei mitzchoka, because you have to sit on his forehead. El kadesh lo yitzdara David, but in order that David shouldn't have anguish. Leilech v'lachzach esrosho, to have to go and cut off his head. Because this way David didn't have to walk an extra 12 amos and a half. Because Goliath was 6 amos and a zeres high. And he fell forwards instead of backwards. So David didn't have to go twice the height of Goliath, which otherwise he wouldn't have had to go. And therefore, as a favor to David, he fell forward. This is very strange. To cut off his head. It's strange. So for the 20, let's say it's 25 feet, according to the Chazon Ish. 25 feet. So a mace is necessary for 25 feet. To say, big deal. So it's a very strange Rashi. It is a medrash. The medrash, the only way I can make sense of medrash, which is not a good approach, but I don't have a better approach, is that the medrash says that it's in order to fulfill a pasuk. The pasuk Tehillim says, "Adoshis oivecha hadom l'raglecha." The Tehillim Kufiyot says that I'm going to make your enemies fall at the threshold of your feet. So it's not really like Rashi saying, though. It sounds like from Rashi that there was a specific mila in David not having to go those 25 feet. Yet from the Medrash, the way I understand it, the Medrash is stressing not so much the savings of the 25 feet, but rather that David's enemies fall down on his feet. In other words, literally, figuratively speaking, he can overrun all of his enemies. Okay, be that as it may, let's see. Pasuk, what are we up to? Pasuk Nun. David was stronger than the Philistine. Bakela with the slingshot, Uvaevan with the stone. And he smote the Plishti, and he killed him. The cherub ain biyad David, despite the fact there was no sword in the hands of David. Vayoretz David, David ran. Vayamod al plishti, and he stood towards the plishti. Vaykachas chabo, and he took the sword of the plishti. Vayishlefa mitzara, and he removed it from its sheath. Vayamosaseu, and he killed it. Vaychrosbas rosho, and he used it in order to cut off his head. Vayua plishtim, and the plishtim saw kimeski baram, that their hero had died. Via Nusa, and they ran away. Now, a couple of things in the pasuk. First of all, in pasuk Kedun and pasuk Now, there seems to be redundancy. First it says by Miseu, he killed him. Then it says by Moseseu again, that he killed him again. So the only person to say that he started killing him with the stone, but he wasn't yet dead yet. He was down but not out. And then the final coup de grace was delivered by the sword. Another thing here is that you think David could have got Goyas could, in other words, that's nice. No, I like the Pashup Shot answer, an alternative understanding of the miracle, in order that Goyas shouldn't be able to recover. So that's why he fell for it. But still doesn't help Rashi, because Rashi sounds like it's the distance which David was saved from traversing, the 25 feet, which is a little bit difficult still. But that could be shot in the Pashup or in the Chazal. Okay, what did he say? He said that Goliath fell forward instead of backwards. It was a miracle that Goliath fell forward instead of backwards in order that he shouldn't have enough time to recover while David was making his way to the head. Which is a nice thing to understand. Also, the Malvim speaks about way back when, at the beginning of this whole episode, beginning of Perek Zayin, Goliath promised that if he was defeated, then the plishtim would be slaves to the Jews. And obviously this condition was not met. So you can say, yeah, Goliath, Arafat, what do you expect them to keep their conditions? They're all these people from Gaza, they can't be trusted. But the thing is that the way the mom explains it, says that the condition David imposed, excuse me. The condition Goliath imposed and said that if I lose, then we'll all be your enemy, your slaves, was on the condition that this whole affair was treated like a proper duel. And a proper duel, then the choice of weapons would have been the same. You know, walk 10 paces in each direction, and then to turn and face each other. They would have been exact equality. And since David chose not to go the route of a duel, but rather to use a slingshot and the whole business, so therefore the plishtim were no longer bound by the condition made by Goliath on their behalf. Okay? The terms were not met, and therefore the plishtim ran away. No, lahavdil or shtickel, but many years ago, right after the 67 war, so Ephraim Kishon wrote a humorous piece called Unfair to Goliath, in which he says, you know, how the UN would come and say what a terrible thing it is that Goliath was destroyed by David, and how if it were Mizmanazad, the Goyim would turn it around, the UN and the Arabs would say how the juggernaut David overran the underdog Goliath, etc. It's a very funny piece. So, I'm reminded of that here because it's the way the Malbim explains it is that the reason why the Goyim, the plishtim, did not abide by Goliath's condition is because the original conditions of the duel were not met. But David took a handicap in not accepting the original conditions of the duel. The original conditions of the duel would have at least afforded him a sword, right? So they would be equal. But he didn't even get that. So, but nonetheless, that's the way the Malbim explains it. Says, since it wasn't a war, a battle on fair keel, so therefore the plishtim were not bound to become the slaves of the Jews, and they simply ran away. Okay. Yes. Yeah. You know, now they remind me, I think there's some sort of medrash about David cutting off Goliath's head. But I looked at the medrash saying the Yalkut Shimoni, I didn't see anything. But you're right, it's probably a medrash somewhere else. Do you remember what it says? Well, maybe when we get to, maybe when we get to Urim Batsheva, we'll find out, because I don't remember offhand that part of the story. So we'll have to see if we see it. The Mepharshim don't bring it here. Neither does the Yavuk Shimoni. Maybe down there when we get there we'll see it. Okay, let's go on. Nun Gimel. Nun Beis, excuse me. Vayakumu Anche Yisrael of Yehuda, the people of Yisrael and Yehuda arose. Vayariu, and they blew their battle horns. Vayedifus Aplishim, and they pursued the Plishim at Boach Hagai until the valley, Vayashari Ekron, until the gates of Ekron. Vayplucha Loli Plishim Baderech Sharim. The casualties of the Philistines fell on the way to Sharim, Vargas to Gath, Varekron is strewn with Philistine bodies. The Jews returned from their hot pursuit after the Philistines. Via Shoslus Machanaim, and they looted their camp. Vaikach David as Rosh HaPlishti. David took the head of the Plishti. Vaivye Yushalayim, he brought it to Yushalayim. Ves Kelov, and the weaponry of Goliath, Sambarlo, he placed in his tent. Now, his tent, he didn't have a tent there. He was just visiting. He was a day visitor in the battleground. So rather, his tent means eventually brought it back home with him to Beis Lechem. The truth is that the Kalim didn't remain in Beis Lechem, because we know that eventually the Goliath's sword found its way to Nob, the city of the Kohanim. Also, another interesting point is that the head of the Plishti did not get to Yerushalayim immediately, because we'll see later on, it was circulated throughout all the cities in the Jewish kingdom. But there's a very basic difficulty with this Pasuk Basmum Zal, is that Yerushalayim was not a Jewish city at the time. David conquered Yerushalayim. How did the head wind up in Yerushalayim? It's unlikely to say that this is talking about some years later when David finally conquered Yerushalayim, maybe a decade later, whatever it was. Seems like the same place immediately. So what? Yeah. What? That's the Radak. Just a second. The Malvim, you're right. I'll get that a second. The Malvim says that Yerushalayim means they brought eventually to Yerushalayim. And the Yerushalayim means here that he brings a big proof of the beginning of Shoftim. Because the beginning of Shoftim says that they did conquer Yerushalayim. So the Malvim says that really Yerushalayim was conquered by the Jews. There was a fortification within Yerushalayim which was not conquered till the times of David. That was belonged to the Jebusites. But Yerushalayim itself was conquered, and eventually the head ended up in Yerushalayim. Now the Radak, that's the Malvim, the Radak says a remarkable thing. The name of his father. The Radak says that Yerushalayim was called, Yerushalayim at the time was the name given to the city of Nov. Nov was called Yerushalayim. It's a good question. Why is it called Yerushalayim? Glad you asked. So take a look at my notes. From the Pete Sadek and Mitzora Gimel. This is, everybody see that towards the end of the first page of my notes? Hallel Shabbos. On Friday night, Omrim, we say, HaPorei Sukkah Sholem, he who spreads the tent of peace, Aleinu upon us, V'alkom Oysan, over his entire nation of Israel, V'ayu Shalayim. As for Tzadik, this is a very difficult blessing. After his man is a Yisrael Golos, in our day and age, Jews are Golos. Uksivan, it says about our current situation, at least when Reb Tzadok was alive in the 1800s, Tzion Tzadeh Techarash, Tzion be plowed under like a field. Yerushalayim means here, Yerushalayim will be to desolation. Vara Bais Bamasyan, and our Bais will belong to the animals of the forest. So what does it mean? We're davening for Yerushalayim. Says Reb Tzadok, but the pshat is like this. Ach Yerushalayim, Hainu Kedushas Machane Yisrael. Yerushalayim connotes the sanctity of the camp of Israel. And in Yerushalayim proper, Visham Nechal Kachikan, they could eat the korbanos. Umayser Sheni and Mayser Sheni. Uksivan, it says, by eating the Mayser Sheni, brought up Yerushalayim, Vachiyos Mayser, Laman Tilmad Lira, so you should learn to fear God Vagoymer. Shachilah Shabakdusha, eating with holiness, maybe Azam Lira brings a person to fear of God. V'edemuna, which is by the faith or the belief. Shemesim alivo, and a person understands in his heart or mulls over in his heart. Shemelech malchem lachim akadosh baruch hu omei lav, that God, the King of Kings, standing over him. V'roya b'maisav, and sees his deeds. When he contemplates that, miyad magiyei lavir, immediately becomes fearful of God. V'haynu, and this tells us, Yushalayim midas malchus Yushalayim is based on the kingship of God is revealed. Like it says in the Zohar, il yira, he is all fear. V'shalta b'yir, and Yushalayim yiru, there reigns fear. V'yadei muna, which is by our faith in God, which is revealed in Yushalayim. So the way I understand this from Tzadik, although I might be taking liberties with it, so what, that's my prerogative. The way I understand this from Tzadik is that any city at the tiny time in Jewish history which has directly to do with the awe and fear of God, the place in which the Mishkan was, or the greatest relationship with God was manifest at the time, is called Yerushalayim. You know, they said Vilna was called Yerushalayim the Litta, and one time Baltimore was called Yerushalayim the America. As Yerushalayim means the place where the awe and fear of God is most manifest at that time. And Yerushalayim at that time was called Nov. Or Nov was called Yerushalayim because it was already known that the name given to the place where the greatest Yira of Hashem is present, where the Yira is complete, the Sholem, is Yerushalayim, Yira Shalema. And at that time, the name was connected to the city of Nov. Okay? That's what I think the Pshat of Radak is. Now, let's go to Pasuk Nun Hey, a very, very difficult Pasuk. Ukiros Shaul is David. When Shaul saw David, Yoitz in the cross Plishti, going out towards the Philistine, Omar El Avner Sarat Sova, he said to Avner's general, Ben Mizan Nar Avner, the son of whom is this young man Avner? Vayomer Avner, Avner said, Chai Nav Shecho HaMelech, by your life the king, Yadati. Do I know? Amazing. David has already been playing whatever, the harp, the lute, the lyre, whatever it was, before Shaul. At the beginning of the parak, before the battle, Shaul's already spoken to David. They've spoken to each other. Shaul tried to put his uniform on David. David wouldn't wear it because it was too heavy. Even if you're a Bible critic, you got a lot of difficulty with this pasuk. You know, you can't say that there are three different accounts, four different accounts, and they've all been pasted together here. This is very difficult. How can Shaul not have known? David, right? This is a very hard passage. Everybody goes crazy here, yeah. No. You'll see from the continuity here that this pasuk is not a flashback. It's a continuous description of immediate events. It's after the fall of Goliath, after he's been vanquished. Where's David going? Which pasuk?
Somebody else put it in your mouth, right? Someone else stuffed the drink in your mouth.
Oh, you're right. I take that back. Sorry. Right. This is as David is trudging out towards the police station. It's back. It is a flashback. I'm sorry. Sorry, my mistake. You're right. Okay.
But it seems to me that he just believes that the slingshot did not kill him, or maybe it was not enough to kill him.
I don't know why that's
the reason. Did it kill him?
Slingshot didn't kill him. The sword killed him. The slingshot stunned him.
Just stunned him,
yeah. Now, let's see the Malbim here. The Malbim is a starting point. A couple of other things I have to see. Here on the bottom is Var Shmuel. The Kurosha of the Gukhule, Ben Mizana Avner, Elohim Yomru, I guess Elohim means the divine philosophers, or philosophers of divinity. To take away the wonder on show, Shashal Avi David, who asked upon the father of David, Fayodaku ben Yishai, Ray knows that he's the son of Yishai, Kanal per Simon Tezai, like we saw in Perak Tezai. Ki Eis Yofia Oya Loki, they explain it when there appears a divine light, Vivkaka Shachar Oro, and they will burst forth like the morning star its light, Alisha Rokh, and a person of spirit, Azitapechli Shachar, that person will become a new person. Kikarin upon him, his face will become illuminated. V'od v'adol upon him, and glory and splendor will be before him. Mitzad said, for this reason, El Basi Flabish David Ruach Gvu, and David took on a spirit of strength. The Zoroki and a divine radiance. Lo Ikiro Shol Atosho did not recognize him. The Drosh Lomar, and therefore he asked and queried, Mio Isha Ruach Halaz, who is the spirited person which I see over there? That's the Medrash. Uvam lefi ha-pshat, but based on the pshat, Ama achash shol yivtiach losses his bito lam and atzeach as haplishti, since Shol promised his daughter to he who vanquishes the Philistine, as techa bisnadev David liuchom ito, so immediately when David arose to fight with the plishti, ola libo, he arose in Shol's heart the concern, ki b'achreach yitztarech l'shar nidro, that he's surely going to have to fulfill his vow. Vlasi slowest the bito to give his daughter to David. L'chein darash Techva covered Beis Aviv. So therefore, he immediately started inquiring as to the honor of David's household. Lo Dashmo, not to those names. Ki Adash Shmo, Shem Aviv, Yishai. Munyu, his father's name was Yishai. Rakadas, Yichuso, Maroso. But to know his lineage and his station. Vana ben Miza and Ar Avner, and he asked Avner whose son this was, who, Imavid Nuchas, meaning, is his father of high lineage, Nichbad, honored in his upanim, and respected, Rosh Yitzchak HaMelech, who's suitable to marry into the king's family. Vavner lo yada manelzen, Avner didn't know an answer, ki kovid Yishai lo know da oz, because he did not know the glory of Yishai. Those are two things in the Malbim. Rashi gives it a more political spin. See Rashi here, Nunei. Ben Miza and our Omer Abu Seinu, the rabbi said, Vichiloya Makira, didn't he recognize him? Aruch, Stephen says in previous parak, Vayavei Mo, that he loved David very much, Vayavei Mo, Sechelim, and David was his arms bearer. Ella, but the Bashad is like this, Romi Snag Batachsi Milchoma. He saw David conducting himself with a warrior's strategies. Omer Shol said, In Bamish, Bachas Peretz, if he comes to the son of Yehuda Peretz, Melech here. He's going to be a king. Shamelech poeid geder lasis lo derech, because we know that the tribe of the family of Peretz will eventually take over the kingship, because we have a tradition that the name Peretz is linked to the right of a king to break open fences lasis lo derech in order to build himself highways. Vein machim yor, nobody has the right to impede upon him. If however he only comes from the family of Zerach from the tribe of Yehuda, then we don't have to worry because Choshvi only means to be significant but not a king. The servant said, instead of asking whether he comes from a family suitable for the kingship, if not, shall ask in what level the call, if it's suitable to join the congregation of Israel or not. In Rav, Sharei Mirusa Moavia, because he comes from Musa Moabite. On the Ravna, Avner said, "Whoa, Shaniel Roimert Ammoni, an Ammonite, is forbidden to enter the congregation of Israel. A Ammonite, but not a female Ammonite." No. Not if the Roman verse, not a female one. I'm a low, so does the Abner respond? No. Kanemar al-Derech ha-shel lo kidmu eschem balech mo ma'im. It says the reason why Moab is not allowed into the land to the people of Israel is because they did not bring forth the bread and water. In Derech Yishabakach, women don't bring the bread and water. In Kere, I'm a low, ha-lo mekarim, so do I extend over the shoots of God and men towards men, ma'anoshim mikras anoshim, ma'anoshim mikras anoshim, and women towards women. Nishtatik Avner. Avner was silent. So I'm going to show said, go find out what that law is, whether David is allowed in the congregation or not. So Rashi learns that it was much more political. In other words, he wanted to know, is this guy eventually going to take over as king or not going to take over as king? Same idea as the Malbim. That he did it, the second shot in the mouth, they want to know about his father's house. But not because he wanted to know if his father's house was to see if he's suitable for the daughter. No, to know if eventually this is the guy who's going to usurp the kingdom from him as promised by Shmuel earlier. Okay? Now, the Ralbag learns perhaps the most Pashup shot. Said, Shmuel was a king. A musician gave him time to time to play before him. A member of his court. There were hundreds of people, perhaps, in Shaul's court. You think he remembered who it was? Right? The Rabbag says he didn't. That's how the Rabbag went. In other words, he said, when David came before Shaul earlier and presented himself, so Shaul thought, another kid. He didn't make the connection. This is the guy who was playing the music for me last week in my court, in my palace. What? Hey, I agree with you. I'm telling you what the Rabag says. You don't have to like the Rabag. I don't like it either, but that's what the Rabag says. Okay? Now, in the Ma'ariv Krah, learned another Pashup Shot answer, which is cute, and I think more smooth than the Rabag. He says the battle took place at a distance from Shaul. After all, Shaul was frightened. They were all frightened, so he couldn't see exactly what was going on. And he thought when David took off the uniform, Shaul presented David with his armor, and David said it doesn't fit. He took it off. So Shaul thought, oh, it must be David's giving up. He's going to go back home. Sometime later, he sees this figure in the distance going out to fight Goliath. He doesn't realize who it is. Had he seen him up close and had he realized that David was the one to have gone, then he would have known it was David. But he didn't realize it because David was in the distance, and therefore he asked Avner, standing next to him, who is this kid who's going out to wage this battle? Okay? Anyway, let's go further. Pasuk Nunvav. Excuse me? This is one of the reasons why. You mean, was the question finally answered here? Yeah, I can't hear the whole question. Again? Sorry. Yeah. Oh, that Shmuel wrote around this time because of this, probably. Yes, probably now, because Shmuel actually is going to die very shortly. So I assume that this is although it doesn't say so here explicitly in Rashi, you're right. Probably this is the catalyst for Shmuel to have written Ruth. Okay. The king said, Shalta ben Mizael, ask who this young man is. So more dignified language, he used the Pasuk Nune. Nune said, nah. He says, Elam, he already gives him new respect because he sees that he killed Nune, like you pointed out. He was just going. David was going. And then in Nunvav, he already said that David killed Goliath. He said, let's call him an Elam, not a Nar.
What is an Elam?
Elam is a young man, but more honorific than Nar. Nar means child. An Elam means young man. David returned from smiting the Philistine. Avner brought him. And the hand of the Plishti was in his hand. You know, I don't know what to make of this. But the entire evening tonight, we have not seen the word Goliath. Plishti. No Goliath. It's almost as if we're saying David here in his maiden battle was doing a battle with Goliath as a representative of the Plishtim. He wasn't doing battle with, in a metaphysical sense, he wasn't doing battle with Goliath on a individual level, but rather David, as the prelude to his life as king of Israel, is doing battle with the Philistine nation. And that's why Goliath is called the Plishti, not Goliath. I'm just giving that as a hypothesis, but it is important to note that he's not called Goliath. Okay? Said Ben Mihatanar, whose son are you, young man? Vayom David is talking to David. He doesn't build him up. He doesn't call him an Elam. He calls him so or not. Vayom David. David said, Ben Avdecha Yishai Beis Arachmi, and the son of Yishai from Beis Lechem. So the Ma'abin puts this psukim. These psukim, they can be learned simple, but the mom puts them into the context of the marriage proposal. In other words, Shaul is asking him through Avner, with Avner, what's your yichus? Are you suitable for my daughter? You come from a Rebbe Shemishpacha, you know, you're capable of marrying it to the kingship. So David says, listen, the way the Malvin learns it, he says, I'm not nobility, I'm not anything, I'm the son of your servant Yishai. And the way the Malvin learns it, what he's saying is, I didn't do this for the marriage. I did it l'shem shamayim. I did it to be Makadi Shem Shemayim by killing Goliath. What comes next? I don't care. Stop asking me questions about my yichus. I'm not concerned. Okay, and that's why he answered in such a short, abbreviated fashion, even a little bit denigrating his father, saying, Avdecha Yishai, but in order to make this point that he didn't engage in this battle with intent to get anything out of it. Okay, Perek Yudches. Now, Perek Yudches, I don't know how much we'll get here. I planted the first four psukim, but I don't even know if I'll get that far. That's an amazing episode. I didn't see anybody really speak about it. Even the Medrash was silent. Look at this. Vayiki Chaloso, the Dabel Shol. He stops being the Shol. Poof! The Nefesh Yonason Nikshua B'Nefesh David. The soul of Yonason became enwrapped in the soul of David. Vayaveh Yonason K'Nafsho, and Yonason loved him like his own soul. They've never seen each other before. All of a sudden, they become such tremendous, tremendous friends. What's going on here? How does this happen? Sight? Just by sight? They didn't talk philosophy, they didn't talk theology, they didn't go to a ball game together. What? But we don't, they didn't have any contact. Because all contact was here.
But for him, he was a tremendous hero. He just went through
Yonason is no small fry himself, though. Yonason did a lot of brave things.
By the way, he wasn't old.
Well, we don't know. It depends how literally take all the Chazals about the age of David at the time. So we don't know. First of all, we don't know how old Yonason is at all. I don't know how old David is. I can't say for sure. Why don't we all four stuck them together? By Kochehu Shol, by Yomu, Shol took him down that day, took David Lonason Shul Beiso, and he said, would not let him go home. By Chutz, Yonason and David preached by Vosol, so can have Shol, and Yonason and David made their own covenant, their own bris, their own agreement, and out of his great love for David as his own soul. Yonason moved the Sami, Yilasher loved the garment which was upon him. Vayuneu David, he gave to David. Umadov, and his entire armor. Ad Harbo, to his sword. Vad Kashto, and his arrow, and his bow. Vad Chagoro, and his armored belt. What's going on here? What's happening? Very, very cryptic. Nobody describes it. So you think, okay, so they knew each other a little bit from before. Still, it's an unbelievable outpouring of love on the poor spur of the moment. Okay, maybe they had met him before, but I don't think it warrants all this. So what's happening here? So I choose, of course, to explain this all metaphysically, mystically. And if you take a look here again in my notes, we have to understand what's going on with Yonason and with David on a mystical sense. And the Tzaddik writes in Perkei Yikra Yudzayin, Varisho Minishmas Mashiach Ben Yosef, the first manifestation of Mashiach Ben Yosef, Shenizgal Abolam, as it was revealed in this world, Kimadumeli, I believe, Shohaya Yonason Ben Shol, was Yonason the son of Shol. V'akein Ne'arak, that's why he's killed. V'lo Yitzabo Shum Chet, despite the fact that he didn't commit any Avera. Ba'akosov in the Torah, Shebish, in the Tanakh, Shebishvilo Ne'arak, for which he was killed. I'll explain that in a minute. And the Mashiach ben Yosef aspect was the source of his great love for David. Shammai said, Mi'avas, and he says later on, Mi'avas Noshim, that the love is greater than the love of man than to woman. Because they are the secret of unity. Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, so to Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, you will be trained reim to friends, glorious passion who cannot separate. And that's why the Navi Yirmiyo made allusion later in history by putting two woods together, two pieces of wood. Eitz Yosef, Eitz Yehuda, Zayim said, the wood of Yehuda and the wood of Yosef. And if you take a look here in the Radak, there's a very amazing Radak here. Radak says, one line, for Nefesh Yonason, Hamasora mean Reis Safaracha, the Masora from the beginning of the Sefer till now, always says Yonason without a hey. Yonason, bar Mishnaim, except for two. From Navra Matzave Railing by Yom Yonason, Yonason's first battle against the Plishtim, several parak or two ago. And from here until the end of the Sefer, it says Yonason. What do we see here again? The extra hay. The extra hay, which we had in Yoshia, is here also in Yonason. And it sticks from now on till the rest of the Sefer. We have to know, hay, as I said before, connotes completion in this world. Olam HaZeh is created with hay. A person reaches their complete madrega, a salvation is complete in this world, it's a hay. It's additional hay, completion, perfection. Yonatan becomes perfected when he meets David. Because Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David come together. The purpose of Yosef and the purpose of David, ben Yamin here in this case, because Yonatan is Moshe ben Yamin, but the same concept, is only completed with, when it comes together with David. And also, we will explain why in a few minutes. But I want to explain just on a tangent here, why is Mashiach ben Yosef killed? You know, the Mekubalim all were terribly, terribly bothered by the concept of Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, which appears in Shas, and Mashiach ben Yosef having to die. Mashiach ben Yosef wages the battles of salvation, then he dies, and Mashiach ben David makes the final geula, the spiritual redemption. And the Gra said, it's been many years since I read this, but in Kol HaTzar, a work ascribed to the Gra, he spent pages and pages and pages talking about how he has to be mispallel that Mashiach ben Yosef shouldn't die, and that he should survive, and that none of the tragedies which might befall him should befall him. And Reb Tzadik brings down that one in the Kabbalim, I forget which one. I want to say the Shlah, but I don't think so. One of them said, I don't think it works out time-wise. One of the ones said that Reb Hirschel Ostropoler was killed by the Cossacks, by Chmelnitsky. He was Mashiach ben Yosef. And he was killed, he was an aspect of Mashiach ben Yosef, and he was killed, very holy Makuba was killed by the Cossacks. And then later on, Mashiach ben Yosef, when he comes again, will not have to be killed. So they're all bothered by this concept of Mashiach ben Yosef having to be killed. And Reb Tzadik says, why does Mashiach ben Yosef have to be killed? Mashiach ben Yosef is pure of all sin. Mashiach ben Yosef is the same concept as Eliyahu HaNavi. And in fact, they're a little bit interchangeable in Kabbalah. Mashiach ben Yosef comes as Mashiach ben David. Eliyahu comes as Mashiach ben David. There's a parallel role for both of them. Eliyahu, who of course will come to later in Tanakh, was considered to be pure of any desires of an illicit nature. And no taivas. And that's why he never had to die. Steph is caused by taiva. Adam Arishon sinned with taiva, with lust, desire for the fruit. You desire something other than closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's death. Eliyahu, he wasn't more perfect than Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, and Moshe, but his characteristic was that he had no desires. He was a zealous man. In fact, some ascribe to St. Pinchas and Eliyahu the same person, and he was a very, very somewhat, perhaps even, we could say, had a temper, but he had no desire for anything other than closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person has no need to die. Mashiach ben Yosef, says in Tzadik, also has no desire for anything. That's the power of Yosef. Restraint. They don't commit their desire to any worldly things. Like Yosef restrained himself with the wife of Potiphar. Mashiach ben Yosef, though, is tainted by his contact with everybody else. Eliyahu had no contact with the common people. He ran away to the caves, to the mountains. He never was tainted, quote-unquote. Mashiach ben Yosef, precisely because he has the work of the salvation, he comes into contact with others. So although he might not have an overt desire, overt taivas, he's been influenced thereby. So Mashiach ben Yosef, as holy as he is, has to be killed. Yonatan as well. Yonatan was perfect. He was the first predecessor, precursor, on Mashiach ben Yosef in this world. Yet at the same time, he too must die, because of his contact with the house of Shaul. It's true, it was a relatively minor blemish. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaktik im svivav kechut asayra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very, very meticulous with the people who surround him, his closest allies, so to speak. So therefore, Yonatan had to die as well. Now, Yonatan is only complete when he meets David. I won't have time to fully explain this tonight. We'll have to come back to it next week. But Yonatan is only complete when he meets David. And that completion, again, I'll come back to that next week, but that completion here is described time and time again with the word nefesh. The nefesh Yonatan nikshara ben nefesh David. Vayaver Yonatan kinafsho. And then again, pasuk gimel, ba'avososo kinafsho. Why nefesh, nefesh, nefesh? So I got to thinking, you know, let's look up what is the word nefesh. Where is the word nefesh? What does it mean? So nefesh, of course, in one connotation means soul. What else does the word nefesh mean? No. It might mean it's related to the word noshaf, which means to exhale. But what else does it mean? What is nefesh? Where does it appear, nefesh? Not in that exact form. Vayinafash. What does vayinafash mean? He rested. Things, it's a strange word. What does it mean, Vayino Fashi rested? Right? Kivosh Shabbat Kol Machtos Shabbat. No. Wrong pasuk. Right. So the Sfarnu says there in Shmos Lamed Aviv Zayin. Take a look here. At that point, the work was complete. And when the work was complete of creating the world, there's rest. In Shlemos, in perfection, there's rest. Vayinafash. That's why the seventh day has a greater nefesh, neshami seira, vitosefes achana, which is an additional preparation, lasig mashakimei elav akel yisbarach, to attain that which God desired. B'shleimus pulah, so when he completed his work in this world, Barmah, he said, Nasa adam tzameinu kidu, saying, let us make man in our image, in our form. Vayinafash, the Sfarno says, was chosen as the word to denote God's rest because it's linked to the concept of soul. With such a shleimus, with perfection reached on that Friday, on that Shabbos, the first Shabbos of creation, an additional Kedusha was given. When one reaches a level of completion, of perfection, in any one area of one's life, one ascends a level. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us, the Vayinafash of Shabbos is not a Vayinafash of plain rest and relaxation. It's a Vayinafash of additional holiness, Neshami Seir, of additional perfection. I normally don't look at Rav Sham Shapol Hirsch, not because of anything against him, I just never got used to it. But he says a beautiful thing there. He says there, Vayinafash, Nefesh is the individuality, the individual personal creature. That's what Nefesh means. So that Hinafash, which is Vayinafash, so it means to withdraw into one's own personality, in contrast to working out at something external to oneself. So it also means resting from an exertion, literally coming to oneself. So besides the Sfarnu, who learns and imparts additional Kedusha, Neshama Yisera, an extra Nefesh. The Rabbi Hirsch learns that in part it means to come into oneself, to make oneself whole, almost to turn internally and focus on one's internal personality and character as opposed to working at things which are outside to oneself. And the truth is, it seems to me that he doesn't say this, but it seems to me that the word pasa means to expand. Right? Pasa, hine pasa nega ba'or. The taras expanded in the skin. Nafash means to withdraw, the opposite, to stop. Pas, right, pas, modified by the hay, is to expand. Pas, modified by the nun, means to stop, which is interesting because hay is 5 and nun is 50, so there's some correlation there. But so I think that what it means here, in stressed over and over again at the beginning of this parak, is that the nefesh of Yonasan, his soul, his personality, was completed with David. What David represented to him was the completion of his soul. It worked both ways. I'm going to explain that next week. David got from Yonasan, and Yonasan got from David. They complemented each other. What Yonasan was lacking, what his nefesh was lacking, that he could have the concept of vayinafash, a completion of self, an uplifting of self, and being able to fully develop his own personality, that he got from David. And David will get that which he is missing from Yonasan. So that's why the two of them had such a relationship. And I think that, again, this explains, a little bit at least, why all of a sudden there's tremendous tug. It's as if each person saw in the other, not as if, each person saw and sensed in the other person what they were lacking to become the complete Oved Hashem, to complete the complete paragon and complete personality which they were supposed to become, and that's what they get from each other. All right, I haven't told you what that is, but I'll give you a hint. Which is real, which is that Yonasan represents Yiras Hashem, and he gives that to David, and that is going to be the connotation of Pasuk Dalet. It's pretty neat, so I'll tell you next week. And David represents Avas Hashem, and that's what David gives back to Yonasan. I'll discuss that again, as I say, next time.